Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they're also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the sixth president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Misha Adishmisai. I'm an entrepreneur here in Vishmisai. I'm running on one side of a financial services company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Banerjees.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone. And from the people from Far East, good night.
Good day, and welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjees. Today is our 15th episode, actually. Wow, since we started the second season. We started more than 3 months ago. Can you imagine that? And already broadcasted in 122 countries through many different channels. Of course, you can watch us on YouTube, Chamomile, IBM TV. So in this program, for those who are new audience, we are interviewing global leaders, investors, thought leaders, and academics on the topic of impact investment, and would like to show powerful examples to inspire you to raise awareness about impact investing and, of course, for you to get into action. So getting engaged in impact investing sector as an expert, as an investor, or maybe just a volunteer. So this is what we really like to do with our program here. Ben, you have, I guess, an amazing story again to break up the ice.
Okay, so this has been a very, very eventful week. After 4 years of climate denial by the late last president, at least we finally have a man in charge in White House who is not afraid to take real and effective steps and commit to reduce the climate emission of the United States with more than 50% by 2030. This is amazing. I really believe when US leads the way, it really knows how to lead the way. And now EU has to muddle its way out and try to follow and catch up.
Yeah, but on the other hand, unfortunately, there are still politicians which believe that the beginning of climate change is still a political choice.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. I was in a discussion with a couple of Republicans beginning of this week, a Republican economist. It was obvious to start with that, first of all, they see politics in everything. They're so blinded by their own beliefs and their propaganda that they do not even see the overwhelming evidences and scientific reports which are concluding that climate denial is going to cost us everything they hold dear, whether it's our livelihood, resilience, economy, and our future, and that of our children. What COVID should have taught them is that a tiny little virus wiped out more than 4% of the
tiny
global...
Wiped
out more than 4% of the global GDP. And yet they think that they can keep on growing economy without paying any attention to nature and its assets.
Yeah, to be honest, I am not surprised. You know, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I found out what is the world's best kept secret.
Oh, that's something interesting. Tell us. Please tell us.
Apparently, majority of the world's citizens, including United States, do not know that we subsidize fossil fuel with more than $5.3 trillion, which in fact causes damage, which is even bigger than that. So, okay, let's leave the discussion for today.
Yeah, no politics anymore today, right?
So what I wanted to say is that the present-day Republicans, they are completely against President Biden's infrastructure bill, but they have seemed to have lost or they do not pay attention to some basic facts on this.
But what does this bill actually contain? So what's it all about? Can you tell more about that?
I mean, I don't want to go too much in detail because then it will become a political discussion. But the thing is, what I understood from the Republicans is that they understand infrastructure means building bridges, roads, and buildings.
Isn't it?
No, unfortunately, we are not in 1950s. We are in 2021.
Then explain, so, what is it?
So to give the U.S. economy a chance not only to survive, grow, and keep its global competitiveness, it has to invest in its internet infrastructure, in its education, renewable energy, which is going to be the future and which is already the future. In fact, more people in the United States are now working at renewable energy centers than in the coal power stations. But somehow these facts, many people are unaware of. But if U.S. stays in the way it is, what it has been doing, I mean, if we follow the conservative rule and go back to 1950s, then they will face an immense loss of assets, as stranded assets or toxic assets. But not only that, they will also lose value in the share market and global competition. Like, look at ExxonMobil. So, which is a proof of why U.S. also has to not only stay ahead of the rest of the world, but it also has to change itself.
But who are the opponents, actually, of this bill? And somehow I smell there must be some tax issues involved or something similar.
Yeah, exactly. So our members of the Grand Old Party, the other name of the Republicans, they do not mind that companies like Apple and Facebook and Google and Microsoft, they don't pay taxes, or they pay minimum taxes in U.S. and they don't pay taxes on their assets, which are parked outside. But they will mind if money is put, or corporates have to pay a little bit extra tax to be able to pay for the infrastructure bill.
Mm-hmm. Sounds interesting. So what's your advice on that?
I would just say, gentlemen, gentlewomen, please pay attention to where we stand now in the present world. What is the future going to be, and which is the future we are heading for? And please make your decisions based on that, on where the investment should go. But tell us, I think we should stop here. Just tell us more about the course.
So it's also part of how to make the future better. So we continue the journey with our course, Profitable Business with Impact. And now we are happy to announce the next date, which will be 20th of May. And we will do two courses on the same day. So very good news for everyone who is from Asia, from around other parts of the world. So we will have one course at 12:30 Central European Time and the other course at 7:30 of European time. So please make a snapshot of this flyer, and you can always find us on Chamomile at events. For those who never seen that before, what the course is about. So we will be teaching how to create successful business, and which is at the same time meaningful, so you can solve social and environmental problems and generate high returns at the same time. We will teach you how to structure this business, how to establish good processes, how to fundraise in impact investing sector and be successful in that. So join us on the 20th of May. It's free course, and that's amazing. I'm really looking forward to do it again.
Thank you. So now we welcome today our guest. So our guest today is Gurminder Singh Khalsa, also known as the Green Guru.
That sounds good. Green Guru. So what we will learn today, hopefully from the Green Guru, is about the history of climate-related investments, history of impact investment from the view of climate-related people, the threats and opportunities in climate-related technologies and investment, some of the activities and investment criteria which Gurminder is looking at when he does his investments.
And Gurminder is also the founder and chairman of International Green Technology Institute since, I think, 2003. Launched various programs on roundtable of green thought leaders, green awards at Green Carpet, green technology leadership lecture.
Green.
That's why he's called the Green Guru in the United States. And he's the president and CTO of the Transformative Capital, which is a strategic financial advisory. And before that, he was advising 15 U.S. state governors and various city officials on renewable energy, green infrastructure, and going green companies. And presently, he's developing EcoSpirit collaborative platform, which supports eco-farmers, eco-entrepreneurs, eco-communities, and promotes economics globally. So with this, we welcome Gurminder Singh.
Welcome, Khalsa. Gurminder.
Hello.
Hello, Gurminder.
Thanks for joining us today. Where are you right now?
I am in a hotel in Singapore under quarantine order for the last 7 evenings.
Okay. How long do you still need to stay in quarantine?
Another six or seven more days.
Six or seven. What are you doing? Like maybe a little advice to people who face the same situation. What are you up to during quarantine time?
What am I up to? Well, you don't really want to know what I'm up to.
Gurminder, you're an extremely multicolored person. You come from 13th generation spiritual leadership. You have been an investment banker, social businessman, technological expert, and environmentalist. So we start with the spiritual side?
Yeah, of course. Let's do that. Yes.
So as you're aware that in our short life of 15 shows, you are the second Sikh gentleman who is our honored guest.
And maybe explain what is Sikh, because not everyone knows.
I think Gurminder can explain it better.
Okay.
So I read the news a lot. You know, I'm a bit addicted to news.
And I
seem to notice that the sector of social and environmental projects are highly represented by Sikhs. How come your religion has such a strong social and environmental side? Can you please tell our audience a bit more of the history of Sikhism and the answer to the above?
I think it's critical that you know, people tend to think that they are five or six major religions in the world. They tend to include the smallest, which is the Jewish faith, with about maybe 16, 17 million people. We are actually, as Sikhs in India, represent 2 to 3% of the population. We are close to maybe 35 million Sikhs worldwide. Sikhism started 600 plus years ago when Guru Nanak came on the scene at a time when India was under the control of Mughal emperors. The Mughal emperors had taken over most of northern India. They were forcing by force, converting people to their own religions. And situation in India was extremely bad, far worse than anything that we have seen over the preceding 600 years. People tend to think World War One, World War Two. Is the worst experience of the last 100 years. When Guru Nanak showed up on the scene, Hindus and Sikhs and other races were being slaughtered by the number of their population in the country. It was only maybe 200 million people back then. They were weighted by the Janu. Each Hindu wears a thread. And the emperor the Mughal emperor back then wanted to make certain that each day at least a ton of that string that each Hindu wears, you know, is him, and that was for people that needed to die before the end of the day. So hundreds and thousands of people were getting killed. In that scene, when Guru Nanak showed up, living was about protecting humanity, protecting all the species on the planet. Regardless of where we came from, whether we are Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, in Buddhism in India, a thousand years earlier, went through the same thing. When Buddhism tried to emerge out of India, the Hindu extremists decided to destroy it. 20 million Buddhists were killed. Buddhism left India. Nowadays, outside of India. The Sikh faith has been different. The difference between a Buddhist and a Sikh is we are both very similar in our meditation and our methodologies about respecting all life, but we are warriors. We are warriors of truth. We are willing to fight and die for the truth. And in that regard, Sikhs became not only warriors, but they became reformers. We wanted to reform the way the world lives. Mind you, we were living only in India at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the Guru Nanak knew that was the situation worldwide. Worldwide, we as humans have not learned how to live with each other, let alone live with nature and other species. We think that we are the most intelligent species on the planet. And I guess I think we have a lot more other species that have a lot more intelligence than we do. So in that light, Sikhs have always been at the forefront, whether it's of social reform, whether it is political reform, whether we had to go out and fight the first human rights battles. We didn't fight in Christianity. Christians had to fight for their own lives. In Sikhism, we went out for the sake of protecting another person of another race, of another religion. So we were one of the first to get to the battle to fight human rights wars. Sometimes people tend to question why Sikhs love weapons, why Sikhs are warriors, why Sikhs wear a knife, and we have a lot of respect for weapons. Weapons is never the danger. It's a human mindset. Give a person a gun to a human rights lawyer, he will use it different from a criminal, right? Because he will say, why am I doing what I'm trying to do? So
I think I know what you are doing at quarantine. You are meditating, right? And praying for the world to be a better place, connecting with the nature.
I have been doing that since I was 15 years old. When I realized that what I was seeing in the world, this was in the 70s, I realized that something is wrong with the picture. I was watching documentaries on human rights. I was watching documentaries on environmentalism. I loved Jacques Cousteau's oceanographic trips in Calypso, David Attenborough's beautiful way of explaining nature, which is still so brilliantly doing it. As a child, I started asking the question, what's going on? What's going on around us?
Did you find an answer, Guruji? What is wrong with us? What's going on?
We humans are in a state of denial. We have not been in only in a state of denial for last 100 years. We have been in a state of denial for the last 10,000 to 100,000 years. Various civilizations have come before us, have been totally wiped out for exactly the same things we are doing right now, where we have no respect for life, no respect for nature, no respect for each other, and no respect for other species on the planet. So when you have that kind of scenario, you end up start thinking, what can I do? And as a child, I do not know that I could contribute. But I did know one thing. I loved nature. I felt nature in a spiritual sense. It's the reason why I call my latest company EcoSpirit, because I felt the spirit of nature calling out, connecting with me. I was, you know, still uncertain what all that meant until I made a trip to Borneo, which is the biggest rainforest in Indonesia, in Southeast Asia, 300 years old rainforest, 300 million years old rainforest.
Yes.
And when I went through a beautiful valley of flowers, valley of trees, valley of beautiful birds and animals, 3 weeks later, I went through the same place and none of those were there. All I saw was destruction. And I saw this huge Mitsubishi machine cutting trees down maybe one to five minutes each leaf, grabbing a tree and automatically cutting a tree. It was not even a lumberjack. It was a machine cutting this entire forest down. I was only 15 or 16 years old. So this impacted me very deeply. But nobody could give me answers. Only a little later that I learned from one of my cousins who was a doctor that the world is getting environmentally damaged. And there are green activists and environmental activists out there. Back in those days, of course, it was Greenpeace. And I started learning about Greenpeace. I started learning about People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, which was run by Paul and Linda McCartney from the Beatles. And I slowly gyrated towards becoming a vegetarian, becoming, you would say, an environmentalist. But this were early days, you know. I had no idea what steps I could do. And as I went through my life, it has been a long journey since the 70s, learning each step of the way, each part of the journey, beyond watching the documentaries of David Attenborough and Jacques Cousteau, right, finding out for myself how destructive humanity has become. And that was my journey. And what also triggered me was that within the Sikh faith, we do our morning prayers. And within our morning prayers, there is a prayer called Japji Sahib. And within Japji Sahib, there is one line that basically says, Pavan Guru Pani Pita Mata Tarat Mahat, which basically means, Air is father, no, Pavan Guru, Air is Guru, Pani, which is water, is father, and land is Mother Earth. When I saw that line in our Sikh, say, prayers, I realized that Guru Nanak himself also cared about nature, about environment, about the five things that have created all of life, which is, you know, fire, water, air, ether, and the five elements that we call it in Sanskrit.
That's amazing. Amazing journey, Gurminder, really. And it's,
Gurminder, there is a kind of a noise in the background when you speak. And our production team is saying that if you log out and log in, then it should maybe cure itself. There is a kind of, you have to log out and log in.
Or maybe someone is repairing in Singapore something.
No. It is only when Gurminder is speaking. Yeah.
Okay, let's give some time to Gurminder to log out and log in.
He's an amazing person. Not only he has created businesses, I don't know how many of you know Yogi Tea.
Well, I know it. I have it at home, and we have it at home, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And he also has been in the cradle of a lot of major environmental movements and organizations. Gurminder, you're back. That was quick.
We were just saying to the audience that you also invented the Yogi Tea, which is known by all Europe, at least. I don't know, is it in US as well?
Yeah,
so,
and you have it at home. I was certainly not the inventor. We had in the US, Yogi Bhajan, who brought Kundalini Yoga and the Sikh way of living into America since Woodstock in 1967. And in the 70s and 80s, he had pure vegetarian restaurants called Guru Ram Das Restaurants. And one of the most favorite drink, which is our masala teas or chai tea that every Indian drinks, that was one of the most popular things. Unfortunately, the restaurants didn't survive, and then we started thinking in early, late 87. 87, 88, 89, what do we do? The foundations and our spiritual organizations needed revenue. Those who were becoming Sikhs, and these are Western people who are becoming Sikhs, wearing turbans and wearing white all the time, they were not getting jobs. So we felt we can't just be just a spiritual organization. We just can't be successful in that manner, that we needed to get into business. And one of the first product that we decided was Yogi Tea, which is masala. There was only one flavor back then, masala tea, an Indian style. Uh-huh. And from there, it expanded. I think today it's a $300 million company with many different flavors. Western, Eastern, from around the world. And Yogi Tea, of course, is, I think, known globally right now. And beyond that, we have done many different things. We have done peace cereal. And every product that we had was about making certain, we respected nature. We respected the farmer. We respected what went into it. That called it natural food. And one of the main things my guardian father and my uncle Yogi Bhajan did was to start natural food export, which today in Anaheim before pandemic had about 5,000 foods, 300,000 to 500,000 people. Show up, people who want to be in the organic business, in the natural food business. This is the expo they come to. When we started it in 71, there were only five booths, and no one really knew who Sikhs are. And of course, that too has been a long journey.
Gurminder, could you share with us a little bit more about this journey from spiritual to investment and technology? So we know you've been also an investment banker also a lot in technology and knowledge, so finally ended in climate. So what caused this transformation in your profession, and how was this journey happening?
The journey certainly again started very early. I started thinking about the nature and environment on one hand, started thinking about the scientific activity on the other, things that a scientist could do. Technology was early days when I first saw the mention of first microprocessors and personal computers in the 70s. But by early 80s, I understood that technology and green technology and the environment, these are things that could come together. They could complement each other.
Right.
So my early days was only about learning about computers. I got involved in computers, did some software development work, went into writing accounting software, and implementing that accounting software. I mean, it's easy to buy an accounting software today. Back in those days, we had to write the accounting software for a client. We had to go to the client, educate them how to use it. You had to take their files, computer, their normal accounting books and files, and convert them into computers, right? Into data. And I had to do all of those things. I was the computer programmer. I was the installer. I was the trainer. I did about everything. And that journey up to mid 85 made me realize that there's a lot more. A lot more that computers and accounting, finance, technology, all those things could come together. So when I left Singapore, it was 1987, my first trip to the US, and I made a number of trips. And as I saw on my trips, what an airline was using. Airlines were already using computers. They had terminals. They were booking you in even back in those days. And that's it. I said, wow. And I used to ask this question to the airline stewards: are these terminals talking to each other in different parts of the world? And they said yes. And said, and I told them, I said, why can't we do that? We normal humans, because the internet had shown up. Most people like you and me only started communicating over computers after we heard about the internet. So
that's right.
One step at a time, one trip after the other, I realized there's a lot of tools, a lot of technology that are sitting in silos. Scientists are not talking to investors. Investors are not talking to bankers. Mm-hmm. Bankers are not talking to students. And the communication world was still very fragmented. When I arrived in the US, I remember I asking for prepaid calling cards, and they looked at me and said, "What do you mean? What is that?" And I told them, I said, "Well, I have been using prepaid calling cards in Singapore, and I know Europeans have been using it for quite some time." And they had, no one in America had heard about prepaid calling cards. This was 1992. And I stumbled upon a network marketing company called GlobalCom 2000. The funny thing is that the technologist who was making the prepaid calling card was a technologist on one side and a medical doctor on the other side and a scientist at World Health Organization this was the third part of it. But he, in 1981, this man is still around, Dr. Larry Brilliant. Dr. Brilliant was the man who brought Steve Jobs to India and introduced him to Karoli Baba. This was before Apple got started. He himself, Dr. Brilliant, started the first electronic bulletin board in America, in Sausalito, which was nothing like the internet, but it was a black screen with green words. But this was the early days of modems. The electronic bulletin board started talking. You could connect with and chat with people around the world. And when I met Dr. Brilliant in 92, I realized he and I had communicated with each other before over electronic bulletin boards. And because the only other electronic bulletin board other than Well exist, was called SeekNet. Today, if you go to SeekNet.com, they have an internet presence. But back then, they started off as an electronic bulletin board. So you can imagine that this journey that I took, what the things that I saw, and I saw the ability of communication where we could communicate with each other at a lower cost. Mind you, when I arrived in 92, I could only make a call to my mom or my family once a month. And that once a month call used to cost me about $15,
exactly. $20. You know, I was in Switzerland and I to call Russia, I could afford calling exactly maybe one time per month. Otherwise, yeah, it was impossible. Yeah, and it then finally expensive. We started writing emails, and then later Sky came and so on. Exactly. So technology is a very good thing to have when you're far absolutely away from each other.
So when I started seeing this fragmentation, these silos, whether it was communication industry, the scientific industry, the investment banking industry, the environmentalist, I saw that all of them were all sitting in their own silos. No one had a means to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. As the internet started in 1996, and internet society got started. I remember being at an internet society meeting with a very close friend of mine. She was working with me, and she was also my best friend. And I looked at her and I said, at the internet society, we're going to hear windsurf. Windsurf was not very well known back then. Windsurf was one of the people who started TCP/IP that allowed us to create the internet, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, she looked at me and she said, "You seem to know everyone else in the world. How so?" And Windsurf looked at her and said, "This bearded guy shows up everywhere."
Since when do you have the beard, actually?
Well, you know, I've been keeping the beard since I was about 16, 17 years old.
Really? But
as part of my spiritual upbringing, we Sikhs don't cut out beard. We have a turban because our hair is long. We don't cut hair at all. Some call us very hairy beings. some call us towel heads. Mind you, I've had more name callings of who I am ever since I started traveling.
But speaking about name calling, how did you end up being called Green Guru in the US universities?
I was always interested in of course, green activists. Guess what? The whole world is green. when nature is green. And my interest in the word green came from photosynthesis and trees. As I learned about photosynthesis and realized how many chemical reactions, bioreactions happen to make a leaf green, I started understanding the science behind how photosynthesis takes place. When I first arrived in the US, I was approached by someone with a very thick book, and I thought it was a book until I opened the first few pages and I realized it was a business plan. And there was a business plan about putting solar panels on rooftops. The company,
in which year was that?
The company was called Rooftop Solar, right?
Yeah.
And I told the guy, I said, give me some time to read this. You know, this is more like an encyclopedia rather than a business plan. And as I went through the whole thing, I realized technology is there to create energy out of sun, right? And here is some solar energy. The first solar panels came out of Shell, I think Hitachi in Japan. But back in those days, a solar panel was so costly that the per kilowatt was like maybe, I think it started around $30. Today it is almost one cent.
Exactly. Yeah.
So imagine how solar has you would say innovated down to this point today, where solar cost is far better than burning coal, burning nuclear, burning waste. It's cheaper to have a solar panel and a power plant based on solar. My journey started from there. I started looking at technologies. I realized there was wind energy, there was waste to energy. There were a number of different ways that we could convert things around us into energy. And the world needed energy, right? In the early days, everybody who was against nuclear power realized nuclear could produce a lot more nuclear power. But what they didn't tell us was nuclear power was also dangerous. The waste itself was dangerous. And so, there were huge demonstrations in the 60s, 70s, 80s around nuclear power and nuclear weapons and nuclear everything. But where we are today is that we can go from nuclear fission, which is high particle, high energy nuclear reaction, to low energy nuclear fusion.
Fusion, yeah.
And the difference between fusion and fission is one is you are tearing the atom apart, and the other is you are fusing the atom together. And the sun.
Are you also interested in hydrogen economy and hydrogen technology?
Hydrogen, absolutely. Hydropower, hydrogen, methane. There are so many technologies. But we as humans have to get to the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail is nuclear fusion. In the meantime, whether we are doing solar, whether we are doing wind, we are doing hydro or the hydrogen, these are transitional technologies. This will get us to fusion, but they themselves are not the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail is nuclear fusion. So when we start saying solar energy, wind energy, hydrogen, hydropower, these are certainly very interesting investment opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days, only the large big corporations like GE or Siemens or others could get into this business. If you and I can get into a solar power business.
Yeah. And last time we spoke, you mentioned that you're busy with a kind of investing in a game application which will say, show the importance of rainforest to children.
Back in 1992, I saw an animated movie called Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
This animated movie was about a rainforest, the only rainforest left on the planet. And this was an animated world where there were fairies, there were you know, all these fantasy animals and other things in the forest. But it was not just for the producers didn't produce it for the sake of entertaining children or you or me. The intent of the producer was to educate the world that we are destroying our environment, destroying nature, destroying rainforests. And the storyline of Fern Gully was about that, educating all of us that our nature, our rainforest is important. This was the first animated movie that had that kind of a theme behind it. It was shown mm-hmm. at the United Nations General Assembly. Most movies open up in theater. This movie opened up at the General Assembly. This was almost in the same year when the Rio Summit took place. Rio Summit took place later in the year.
Kurminder, are you still engaged with the United Nations somehow?
What is that?
Yeah, Gurminder, are you still engaged with United Nations, maybe in climate change questions or in any other aspects? Are you still working with United Nations?
I have not been working directly with them. My mentor has. And my mentor was the man who invented the word sustainability. He was one of the professors of Al Gore. Other than Professor Roger Revelle at MIT. They together were very much involved in teaching population and the effects on the environment. This was 1964. They were members of United Nations. They together helped launch United Nations Environmental Program. Mm-hmm. And many, many organizations around the world. International Union for Nature Conservancy, which is in Switzerland. Dr. Kochala has been the chairman of. Dr. Kochala is a trustee of the Club of Rome, which is well known in Europe, but Americans tend to think it is a Illuminati conspiracy organization. I have not been working directly with United Nations, but through my mentor and all the scientists, Dr. Michael Nobel from the Nobel family, Dr. Kochala from Development Alternatives Group, and of course, Club of Rome. These were the people that put me in touch with United Nations. My activity was more to find solutions. That's why I started the International Green Technology Institute in association with UCLA. And and that expanded to maybe I think 48 different universities in western half of the US. And by the time Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor, he and I realized that we have to focus on the environment. Arnold had not, when he became a governor after becoming an actor, he was an investor in a company called Gold's Gym. If you know all the gyms around the world, Gold's Gym was 10% owned by Arnold Schwarzenegger, but the two owners, Peter and Paul Gromkowski, were very close friends of mine. And Paul Gromkowski, who were the owners of Gold's Gym, he and I had a great interest in green technology and solar energy. Arnold was very new about it. He only realized when he became a governor that the environment is a critically important part. He was the first to give me a recognition. I still have a letter directly from him and from many other congressmen and senators about the green work the International Green Technology Institute started mm-hmm. focusing on. And so my involvement on the scene was not about working with the United Nations or working with businesses or government. My key interest was how can I help entrepreneurs, inventors who are coming up with all the solar energy, renewable energy solutions. How can we in the institute and the university system can assist them to commercialize this technology.
So, right. Gurminder, if we come to the present, you are now having a new project which is called Eco Spirit. Could you tell more about this project to our audience?
I actually started on Eco Spirit in the last few years, a decade ago, when I started looking at blockchain, fintech, and all the technologies that were emerging out of Silicon Valley and out of the gaming world, video gaming world, I realized that we are now going from within video games into the real world with things that we can use. Video currency was being used within video games to buy digital swords or weapons to play within the video game. By night, when 2008 happened, I realized someone had created Bitcoin. Very little about Bitcoin back in 2008. Someone gave me, I think, 10 Bitcoins for, and he was saying it was. It's,
well, now it would be great to have even 10 Bitcoins.
Yes, but back then it was worth only 2 cents. So
I know.
2 cents for 10 Bitcoins meant only 20 cents. Right?
So.
That 10 Bitcoins would have been today almost $500,000.
Exactly, yes. Right?
And anyway, so you have also involved in blockchain.
Yes, it was by chance getting to know about Bitcoin and blockchain. I realized technology was converging together. It was no longer just IT running. Yeah. The back office, that these technologies were going to, technologies was going to power digital enterprises, digital business. This was again still early days of e-commerce. You know, Amazon had started a full 10-15 years earlier from 2008, but was still struggling even at 2008. Today, of course, everybody knows about Amazon. So my first instinct was, who is this technology reaching? I realized that the internet was only reaching 2 billion people, 5 billion people around the world still did not have internet. There was no smartphone. There was a feature phone, right? If Steve Jobs had not come up with the first Apple phone, we wouldn't be here today. But while Steve Jobs was thinking about mobile phones, I was thinking about how to use the mobile phones to reach people.
Mm-hmm.
I already understood communication. I already understood computers. I already understood IT and those things. And I started realizing that e-commerce is going to be powered by this financial technology where you could pay through your phone, through the website.
And Gurminder, I was thinking, so the question is that you have been people like yourself and very powerful or very famous film actors, Hollywood actors, leaders like Schwarzenegger, and everybody has been involved since 1960s, 70s, 80s, and now we are in 2021. If you look at the present situation, the environment has just gone worse and worse and worse, and climate also. So what do you think is the future going to be? Are we going to make the transition or the transformation in this decade? Because you have been through the last so many decades.
This decade is the trigger point. Unfortunately, humans tend to only see visual things in front of them, visual destruction, whether by nature, by earthquake, by typhoons that are getting stronger and stronger. The human dilemma is that even when we are facing catastrophe, we don't do anything until it becomes personal. Unfortunately, in this last 30, 40, 50 years, the destruction of the environment has not become personal. It's not happening in my backyard. My backyard is not burning,
yet.
And so I'm living in McMansions in Texas. Why would I care what's happening in Amazon, the rainforest? People become very disconnected. And people have been disconnected. They are still disconnected because this danger hasn't come down to their backyard. So where are we today? Today we are at that turning point where the danger is just across the street from your home. It hasn't come across the street to your home yet. You're still saying, oh, the house across the street is burning, but my house is fine. Why should I go out and help my neighbor? We as humans need to realize on this planet, we are all neighbors. Doesn't matter whether we are across the street or across the planet. Where nature is destroying, through powerful rain, typhoons in the Caribbean islands, it is now going to become more prevalent. Where certain storms, certain destructions were only happening in certain Pacific areas, it's going to become more widespread.
Yeah.
I don't want to frighten people, but at the same time, I do want to frighten people because till it does not come into your backyard, you do not know what your neighbor is going through.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask is that you know all these very famous Hollywood stars and investors and companies, but what I see the disconnect is that they are all aware of this problem. They are all aware of the climate. They are all aware of everything. But when it comes to their investment habits, they are still investing in fossil fuel. They are still investing in environmentally dangerous and bad industries, companies. So there's a huge disconnection between the people believe in something, but do something completely different. How do you act on this?
One of the things that we did was to launch the green carpet event. And one of the first green carpet events was organized in Malibu Beach. This was 2003. And the idea behind it was if we could get celebrities and directors to start thinking about communicating within their movies, within their activities, within their lives to the rest of the world, that this danger is clearly a danger that's going to show up. The green carpet event was the first attempt to bring celebrities. The good thing was I met Salma Hayek and Orlando Bloom. I met Leonardo DiCaprio, and this was, they were the young ones who realized that we could do something with their fame and glamour and glitter. But my proposition to them was, I really don't care about your glamour and glitter. I care about green, and this is the reason why this is a green carpet event, because I want you all to start saying to the rest of the world, people who are idolizing them as celebrities, that even celebrities need to get on board. Even people need to get on board. So that led to Global Green, which is Gorbachev's global organization, co-opting the idea of a green carpet event I think everybody knows about the Oscar awards party where all the celebrities get together. But celebrities who come there come on the red carpet, and the focus is themselves.
Yeah.
Our focus on the green carpet was nature, was about the environment, about what's happening to our planet. And with the Global Green, with Leonardo DiCaprio and Salma Hayek, Orlando Bloom, Penelope Cruz, we were able to shine the light to media and entertainment industry that we got to be doing something for the planet, that we need to have a green revolution. And that has gone on and on now. Not every celebrity says I'm green and does green investing. But it was good to know that people like Leonardo DiCaprio was one of the first to put these investments. He invested in a number of companies that I got involved with. I think you all know the movie Aaron Brockovich, who's fighting utility companies about pollution. The real Aaron Brockovich, the real Aaron Brockovich, and the real environmental lawyer, Ed Massery. Ed Massery was one of my mentors, but he was an environmental lawyer. And he introduced me to Leonardo DiCaprio and a number of other celebrities. And I realized that there were some celebrities who were interested in impact investing. And they were doing what they could. But this, again, it was early days. More and more celebrities have done that. But the idea of impact investing is still not
new. Rather new. So how would you say, Gurminder, how can we involve more celebrities into impact investing and attract private capital for the good of future generations
and for the environment?
And that's where we have to start. we have to start with the future generation. Because the future generation, the kids of the Rockefeller families, the Rothschilds, some of the richest families in the world, are starting to realize that their parents invested in fossil fuel and the Industrial Revolution, that their generation should not be investing in those things. So the Rockefeller families, the one name that comes up is Justin Rockefeller. Justin is still in his 30s, but he started in the university system while he was at Yale and Harvard in Impact Investing Network, where he brought together some of the richest families' children who were in university into the idea of impact investment, right?
Right. Gurmukhar, I wanted to ask you, as you are also an investor yourself, so when you are doing impact investment, on what are you looking at? Like, what are your investment criteria?
My criteria is, I call it all inclusive. I know today we talk about ESG, environmental sustainable governance. We talk about triple bottom line, planet, people, and profits. I believe that our model should be more than that. I call it beyond ESG, beyond triple bottom line. And what do I mean by that? When I look at investing, it could be anything. It could be solar, it could be wind, investing in renewable energy.
Gurminder, you have to come a bit closer.
Come closer to us. Gurminder, we don't hear you well otherwise. You need to come closer to the microphone. Yes, please.
Yeah, now it is better. Now we also see you better.
Yeah, I am.
It's a very important question.
My criteria is certainly beyond ESG and beyond the bottom line. I believe that when a business runs a business, it needs to look at all the impact it is creating, even in its supply chain, right? The supply chain has progressively gone greener, but not everything is green in the supply chain. If you look at a farmer farms and creates a green crop, 40% of the green crop is what reaches the market. 60% of the green crop basically sometimes is consumed within the village, within where the farm is used, or it is thrown away. The farmer couldn't sell it, right? One single farmer has that impact, imagine supermarkets from Europe and America and around the world buying from the farmers in tons from various farmers. The impact becomes that much more multiple. So when I look at business, I look at what is impacting the people who are giving us the natural resources, the resources to make the things that we are making. And that could be food, that could be your iPhone, it could be anything. Why aren't people looking at the destruction right at the bottom where resources are coming? And by the time we have an iPhone, we tend to forget that the iPhone or the phone should not be green. It took Apple 20 years to realize that they should be doing things much more greener. It took some of the biggest companies in supermarkets realizing that GMO food and other food is not good for humans. So many businesses and industries, it has been a long journey for them. And for me, personally, I will not invest in anything unless I can go back to the supply chain and see where in the supply chain, who in the supply chain, what in the supply chain is getting impacted.
And to our investors around the world, what would be your investment advice?
That before you invest, do your research about the specific industry or specific sector or some specific company that you're investing in. Pay attention to what that industry has done in terms of environmental impact, social impact, and what this industry can do if it pivots away from destructiveness into solutions that that not only solve the problem for us having a product, but for the people who are having to produce the resources to deliver us the product. So, in retrospect, one must always look at all the impact that we are having if you're going to invest in a certain company.
And what would be your advice to the businesses who are for the younger business and the future generation?
Next generation needs to fully understand one thing. This is one thing that I like to specifically communicate to the next generation, the generation Y, generation X, or as some are calling the Greta Thunberg generation.
Greta generation.
The generation of kids who are like Greta are saying to the world, enough is enough. But my point to Greta is, when children come together to make their voice heard about the changes we need in investing, the changes we need in how we handle the planet, we also need to pay attention to when Greta was alone, it was great. Now Greta has a global flow following who demonstrate in different countries. Some places are 100 people and some places are 10,000 people. But at the end of every such demonstration, Greta herself needs to realize that these children that she has motivated have themselves become the issue. Look at the amount of demonstrators who come together who, because of Greta, are out there, but they themselves leave so much junk, so much soda bottles and junk at the scene of the demonstration. So My feeling is, as much as we need the next generation also needs to know that when they get together, they are also part of the issue. They have become the problem. They have become the polluters. And right there, they are demonstrating to tell the world, pollute well less. Solve the problem of environmental damage. But who is doing the damage? The kids themselves who have gathered together have become a major issue. And I'm not trying to say children versus the adults versus the businesses and the corporations and the governments are all to blame. We are all to blame. We all are. We need to move away from this destructiveness into constructive and creative solutions. Yep. And that to me is very important, that we should communicate this new narrative. Let's not become the issue and or the problem. Let's become the solution. And if we are going to become becomes a solution, then we should look around us. What are we doing? Are we, we also throwing soda bottles and potato chip packaging when we are sitting listening to Greta on the stage? I'm sad that we humans and even the next generation don't seem to realize that we are still destructive.
I was thinking that what you are saying in one way is true, that people should not fight back or they should just demonstrate or improve their way of life. But on the other hand, if you look at the damage which is happening to the Amazon rainforest or in Indonesia, and also the damage the Chinese are doing to the ocean, to the marine life, isn't it now becoming more and more that people have to get more and more active, that just by demonstrating and protesting, it is not enough anymore? People have to really get more active.
I think it's no longer about demonstrating. It's no longer about being just an activist. Today have a technology where we can communicate with millions or billions of people around the world, right? We have a TV show in 120 countries reaching millions of people. If we could, sitting from where we are, talk about collaboration, talk about solution, talk about cleaning up our own house, our own backyard. If we, each of one of us, do that in our own place around the world would become a better place. But if we are expecting someone else to do it, while I am and absolving ourselves from the problem, then we are disconnected.
And that is what worries me. Because, for example, if you look at the Europe, we are talking about going green and doing all fantastic things. And the government is making policies and everybody is thinking about ideas. But it is our own pension funds which are financing the destruction of the forests, which are financing the companies who are doing immense harm to the nature. So we also live in a kind of two worlds. In one side, we are talking a lot of nice things. But our money, when we have to pay ourselves, we are paying it all into the wrong things.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, pension funds on one side, let's take the biggest pension funds in the world, whether it's the Canadian pension fund or the Norwegian pension fund. Of course, Norway has used a lot of the sovereign wealth fund to fund North Sea drilling and made most of their money, billions and trillions of dollars from there. So pension funds certainly gyrated earlier on from where the profits are. And that's where I have a problem. When we say triple bottom line, we say people, planet, and profits. But pension funds only care about profits. They don't care about planet, they don't care about people. But having said those things, step by step, even the Norwegian pension fund has realized that they have to get away from the Industrial Revolution. They have to get away from fossil fuel investing. And you know, you're talking about at least $40 to $50 trillion globally that pension funds have. On the flip side, you have family offices that represent $16 trillion. Most family offices around the world that should be investing in impact investing are still learning. They're still learning where are the opportunities. And one of the biggest biggest problem in impact investing and sustainable investing is to find good quality ventures to invest in. Right.
Well, here I would not always agree, Gurminder. You know, there are many amazing projects, and I think the main challenge is that investors don't want to take risks. And even though, you know, so they want too much security, and there are very good projects out there, but like everyone is still looking for 100% security. And this doesn't happen even in traditional investment. So why here in impact investing, we still don't kind of hesitate if the project is a little bit risky. Okay, maybe it's a seed stage, you know, at the beginning, but you have amazing team, you have a business plan, you have the product, everything, and still investors are kind of, come a little bit later when you already have the first capital. And I think this is really problem also now, you know.
Because today I was talking to one of the oldest families, a very, very, very powerful family who are very strong in impact investment. And they were saying that even today, many members of the families or many of their friends and network, they think, oh, impact investment means I give the money and it's gone forever, or I give the money, but I'll never get as good return as I would get in other investments, which is not true at all. But it is the awareness which is missing still.
And education about what is what, okay. What is sustainability, what is impact investing, and how it can be different inside itself even, you know.
I mean, within impact investing, certainly there is risk. There is risk in investing in anything, whether it's traditional investments in a power plant that runs on coal. It has risk. Risk is everything that we look at. But if an investor is only looking at investment risk, if he fails to realize that climate risk, environmental risk, social risk needs to be factored into the picture, right? An investor certainly wants to make profit on his investments. But when we do not bring these other factors in, and we don't analyze our criteria of investment, someone has to take the risk at some place, some point, to move an idea forward. I remember the first time I met two people who were on the green carpet, and they started talking about electric vehicles. And at that time, General Motors had just come up with their own electric vehicle. This was 2004, 2005, 2006, and in around 2006, the electric vehicle by General Motors was basically eliminated, right? And I had these two gentlemen on the green carpet event ask me the question, what do you think is the future of cars? And I told him, I said, we certainly got to get away from the combustion engine. We certainly need to get into hybrids. Hybrids were very early in those days. But these two gentlemen were the two founders, co-founders of Tesla Motors. Tesla Motors were at that time not involved with Elon Musk. These were two founders who were still struggling with the idea of a battery-driven electric vehicle. And they were having a difficult time, a very, very difficult time trying to convince investors. If someone like Elon Musk had not shown up on the scene after selling PayPal, we would not know about Tesla today. Tesla today is one of the most, you know, if you compare Tesla versus Apple computer, these are two companies that have the greatest market valuation in the world. Both are $1 trillion companies.
Exactly.
But someone somewhere took the risk.
That's right. This is what I'm talking about. You know, the next Teslas are out there and people are not taking risk, not giving him chance to develop it to this extent.
Right. So whether if it's individual investors, family offices, institutional investors, pension funds, we need to create a system where we offer grants, we offer support, we offer seed funds. We need to progress innovation, green innovation, forward. And if individuals cannot do it, governments and pension funds and institutions should step in.
To do it. Exactly.
Having said that, I think more and more institutions, more and more pension funds, certainly the EU is doing more and more. If you compare the EU to the rest of the world, EU is still far ahead. A lot more work needs to be done. A lot more risk needs to be minimized or mitigated. But it takes time to have different types of investors with different appetite for risk to develop a technology. If I look at solar in 92 at almost $30 per kilowatt, and today it is almost 1 cent a kilowatt. If we not had progressed over this last 25, 30 years, if there were no progression of different investors in that technology, you wouldn't have solar energy today.
Exactly.
The time flies. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It was amazing discussion. Thanks a lot for joining us. But we need to wrap up. And
thank you very, very much, Gurminder, for your time and for everything you told us.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for having me. I think I did far more talking than allow you to ask more specific questions.
We will be drinking yogi tea and thinking about you.
And maybe we'll get another chance to answer a lot more people.
Exactly.
And more people's solutions that we can implement.
Thank you.
Bye,
Gurminder.
Wow, that was a journey, yeah?
Yeah, 50 years. God, he has done so much and seen so much. It's amazing. But sorry for the line was not really very good.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. Singapore seemed to have some technology problems, right?
Yeah, but locked up in a room for 10 days is... I think I would also stop shaving.
Well, yeah, then maybe I would go to Singapore if you would do that. Anyway, let's announce the next guest, which is actually a surprise. So for the next week, to get to know who is coming, consult the Chamomile page and then you will know who will be our guest the next week.
And please don't forget about our course on 20th May. You're all welcome to come and join us and then we will proceed forward with impact investment and impact businesses. Thank you very much for watching us.
Thank you. Act with impact. Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee's. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the 6th president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Amisha Adish Desai. I'm an entrepreneur here in Adish Desai. I'm running on one side a financial services company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Benergies.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.